Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here. And it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.
Acast powers the world's best podcasts. Here's a show that we recommend.
It's the question that's on everyone's mind. How do you live a good life? Is it about work, health, or relationships? What about happiness, meaning, and money? What really matters? And how can you dramatically improve all of these things? These are the questions we explore every week on the top-ranked podcast, Good Life Project, hosted by award-winning author and perpetual seeker, Jonathan Fields, which also happens to be me. Every week, I sit down with world-renowned researchers, experts, and scions of art and industry on the Good Life Project podcast. This week, in fact, we're sharing a fantastic conversation with the author, Elizabeth Gilbert, about a single practice that changed her life. Listen to the Good Life Project podcast wherever you get your podcasts. Acast helps creators launch, grow, and monetize their podcasts everywhere. Acast.com.
Acast helps creators launch, grow, and monetize their podcasts everywhere. Acast.com.
This is a Lip Media podcast.
We acknowledge the traditional owners of the land on which we are recording. We pay our respects to their elders, past and present, and the Aboriginal elders of other communities who may be listening today.
Welcome to The Gays Are Revolting, a definitive weekly news source for contemporary gays.
We put the G in LGBTQIA+, and we're here to help you be the best G you can be.
Head over to Apple Podcasts to leave your rating and review, and book tickets for our very first live show happening in February in Melbourne.
You can also join our Facebook group by searching The Gays Are Revolting, or follow us on Twitter at Gays Revolting or Instagram at Gays Revolting Pod.
Hi!
Hello!
Welcome back, guys!
Oh, hey! 2 weeks in a row, four of us. It's crazy. This is crazy.
Uncommon.
You listeners are really getting your money's worth on this free podcast.
We are joined by the man who couldn't find his way out of a wet paper bag, even if he tried, Kyle.
Oh!
Love you.
Wow.
I didn't know who that was going to be.
Yeah. It could have been anyone.
We also have Luke, who has now set the Guinness World Record for the oldest twink alive.
Thank you.
And Thomas, whose ass is so jealous with the amount of shit that comes out of his mouth.
That's so true. It's true, but it's good to know how you feel about me.
Jesus.
Hi.
I have a wet story for you.
Oh, fuck. It's been a while, actually. I'm surprised we made it this long.
Because
it's like that little ticker on like the room, like on the wall is like clicked over.
How long have we gone without a Wet on Wellington story? For those of you who haven't heard our previous episodes, Wet on Wellington is a wonderful gay sauna in Melbourne where people go to fuck and sauna.
And we're also surprisingly not sponsored by them. Yeah, by the way. We love talking about it.
We might be soon. No. So I hadn't gone for a while because we talked about it on this podcast so much that people were like, hey, I like the podcast. So I haven't been for quite a while. So I went out and I got drunk and I was in PL and I was like, I'm so drunk. I spilled wine all over myself. I made the bartender give me a spare shirt from his bag. Oh, so
did you know the bartender?
Vaguely. So I stumbled out the PL. I said to my brother, I've got to go home. They're like, it's 10:30. I was like, I'm wasted. It was like 2 in the morning.
Yeah.
And I stumbled out of the PL and I was like, oh, well, went on Wellington's just a short walk down the road. So I went down there. And I got in there. And so there's that foyer area that you go into the first door. You go into a foyer area before you pay money to go through to the paid area. And there was like 15 people crammed into that area. I was like, what's going on? It's like the peasants are revolting. And they were all like, oh, the ATM's broken. So I was like, I'll look after this. And I went up to the counter and I was like, sorry, I just wanted to pay for entry, but the ATM's broken. Can I pay on card? He's like, no, we only take cash at the door. I said, that's all right. You must be new. Go to the bar. Go to the bar down the back of the venue. There's an FPOS machine there. It's cordless. You can bring it back here. We'll just pay with our cards.
Jesus.
And he goes, oh, no, it's just that we, like, that's for the bar takes the money through that, but we can only take cash at the door. I was like, I'm sure it'll be fine. Like, the ATM, because they've got an ATM.
Laying down the law.
He's like, you really can't. You got to go up the road. I said, I don't want to cool rank here or anything. I said, I've never tried to get anything. I was like, look, a lot of the people here are probably here because I've talked about it. One guy goes, yeah, I'm here because of the gays revolt.
Oh my God.
And he's like, okay, well, yeah, I still can't let you in.
I am. Okay.
So I stepped out the front. I looked down the road to how far away the ATM down the road was. I was like, fuck this. I'm not. So I walked back in. Everyone's still standing in that foyer. And I just ripped the out of order sign off the ATM. And I put my card into it.
Yeah.
And I tried to get $20 out. It wouldn't work. I tried to get $50 out. It did work. Oh. So I said, don't worry, everyone. It's fine. You just can't get 20s out, but you can get 50s out. And everyone like applauded.
Oh my God.
And so everyone like paid their entry and went in, and then everyone was buying me drinks. And amazing. I was like, oh my God, this is so awesome.
Not all heroes wear capes.
Exactly. Yeah. Some of them wear towels. But then later in the night, I'm walking around upstairs and like people kept saying to me, oh, loved the latest episode. And someone was like, I know you're uncut under that towel.
Oh my God.
Last episode and stuff. Basically, what I'm saying is I'm going to have to quit this podcast because I go to When on Wellington for anonymous sex in dark rooms so they can have guilt-free fuck fests.
Yeah.
And dear now God. People
you just have to start wearing a mask or something.
Yeah.
Go in disguise.
Well,
dye
I'm
your hair.
I'm getting really fit because I've never been that before, so no one will recognize me when I am.
Oh, my God.
Who else embarrassed themselves this week?
Yeah, me always.
Yeah.
Every
what
day.
What you do, Jared?
This week was pretty low-key. I home waxed my butthole.
Whoa. Oh, my gosh. How did that go?
I've seen a photo of your butthole. That's a no mean feat.
Because hunting season
the forbidden forest.
There's a wabbit.
Oh, my God.
Yeah. So I just tried those weird strip things. But the last time I did it, I knew that you have to be in a certain spread eagle position.
Oh, gee.
Which requires, like, a second person to do.
Oh, okay. Yeah.
Oh, poor JB.
JB.
It wasn't JB this time, but it was still very uncomfortable.
Who was helped the person?
You? I'm just going to say a very helpful member of the community.
Someone, some poor guy off, some poor guy off Grindr's come over and like, okay, I'm ready to fuck, and you're just like, well, my kinky is guys are waxing my ass.
Yeah, good, that's poor.
The
for
Uber
me.
Eats delivery guy.
And I'm very happy to say that we are joined by Andrew Rogers, LGBT plus elder and self-described quiet activist. Andrew, thank you for coming on the show.
Thanks, guys, for having me.
Welcome, welcome.
Welcome, welcome.
Thank you.
We're thrilled to have you here. I want to start by asking you about the Coming Back Out Ball. And the ball was conceived as a gift to honour the LGBT plus elder community. Now, I was following it closely on social media, and it was a fantastic event. It looked beautiful. It looked like everybody had a fun time. Can you tell us what it was like being there?
Pretty powerful.
Yeah.
Both times. I've been to both balls now. The first one was last year. To see so many older people, and I'm talking about people who are a generation older than me, you know, the real trailblazers in our community, be honoured for what they've done by such a spectacular event. And here's the thing. It was in the heart of Melbourne.
Yes.
Yeah. It was in the Melbourne Town Hall. We are talking the heart of civic Melbourne. Now, you go back to when they were young people, and everything was in the dark, it was in the shadows, it was in out-of-the-way places. And we were standing on the corner of Swanston and Collins at peak hour at 5.30
at night. An event that has support by the Victorian government.
Oh, yeah, we can. And it was lovely at one stage. I think we ended the night doing Nutbush.
Of course.
I mean, and watching your generation having to follow us in the steps was really exciting. I suddenly thought, oh my God, I'm a dance teacher.
Andrew, you recently celebrated 40 years since you came out as a proud gay man. But for a lot of LGBT plus elders, going back into the closet is a very real possibility. Why do you think that is?
I think because we have yet to educate the mainstream on what differences there are for LGBTI elders who are seeking residential care, whether it be at home or living in you know, residential. Oh, absolutely.
Yeah.
Back into the closet.
Back into the closet. I know of people, and there's plenty of research on this, but I know of people who pack away the photo albums. Mm. They pack away the framed photographs off their shelves of the lives that they've had. They pack away the books and magazines before the home care person comes to do the cleaning or the washing or the ironing. Now, it's interesting because these are people who, if you like, are people we would call generation silent. They were the people who lived through the criminalizing years where you had to stay in the closet. So they've not always come, even though they've now lived more out, there's never been that sort of exuberance about it. It's been very quiet, it's been very private, with a lot of fear, because they were criminal. back when they were younger.
Do you think that behavior becomes sort of habitual in a way?
Yes.
If they've experienced it for so long, that's like second nature.
It's how they've lived their lives. Mm. And the interesting change will come over the next decade when the first generation who started to come out and who lived out lives and have always lived out lives begin to access the same sort of healthcare services and the aged care services.
Because I know that Daylesford has the aged care facility that is designed for LGBTI people, but it is quite expensive and not really a viable option for a lot of people.
You know, here we get into economic differences.
Yes, exactly. And so what we really need to be looking at is stuff that's available to everybody.
Well, the approach has been to educate the mainstream service providers that they have an obligation under the law to not discriminate in the sorts of services they provide. And that also means not discriminating in the quality of care.
Mm.
And quality of care really means recognising the individual for the life that they've had. And people say, oh, we treat everybody the same.
Yeah.
But you can't treat us the same because we come from a different cultural background. Yeah. We don't have, I mean, it may change, you know, 50 years from now, you know, go to a gay dinner party and they'll be talking about Johnny's run to the school and who's getting into which college and all of that sort of stuff. Mm. But now we don't have that. We don't have kids. We don't have grandkids. I read a story the other day that was in some research where there was a trans woman who'd lived for 30 years as a woman. And when they went into aged care, their son said, you will live as a man or you will not see your grandchildren.
Oh, my gosh.
I can't imagine.
That's awful.
Jeez.
And I guess part of the fear there, not that I sympathise with the grandson, but it's not just about educating the staff that work at these facilities, but part of the problem is also the other residents at these facilities.
Yeah. It's residents, and how do you biological families. Yeah. We hear lots of stories about couples who've been together a long, long time, and suddenly members of the biological family will turn up when one of them needs care.
Yeah.
And they'll say, all right, you can do all what you've been doing over the years, but we want financial guardianship.
Of course, yeah.
So they're in there for the money. And that's really scary. So what we're needing is more people to be advocates.
Yeah.
Now imagine being a single older LGBTI person. Mm. Who's going to step in and be their advocate? But, you know, if they get dementia, who's going to look out for them? You know, we have a responsibility in our community to start really looking after the people who blazed the trail that gave us the rights that we take for granted.
Mm.
It's as simple as that.
Do you think the answer is possibly creating ones that are specifically designed for the LGBT community?
We don't have the resources.
You don't reckon we have?
We don't have the resources. Let's think about geographic diversity.
Mm-hmm.
People who live in the country who are LGBTI, do they want to leave the networks that they've got, the country towns to go to an exclusively LGBTI facility?
Mm.
But there are now government plans and action plans, and I believe that last week in Canberra they were signing off on the LGBTI Diversity for Aged Care Framework and Action Plan. And I'm working at the moment casually in providing aged care training on LGBTI awareness, so we're doing it that way, via the mainstream. That's how we've always done it, with everything we've had to do.
Mm-hmm.
We've had to educate the wider community, so we keep on doing it.
Like, I work in mental health, it's something I'm really interested in. And Andrew, you've been open about your experience with social isolation and some of the mental health challenges as well that you've had. I see depression on a daily basis, but it's always unique to each individual. Do you think there are some things that are unique to mental health challenges that the elder LGBTQ plus community experiences that maybe we're unaware of, or that we need to start talking about a bit more openly?
I think as a community we need to start talking about mental health and suicide in our community right across the age range, irrespective. I do believe that there are issues that are more pertinent to older people because of the backgrounds and the lives that they've had to live. Because they've had those deep scars and those, you know, those very deep wounds around sexuality, that does impact on the mental health. But I've been an out man for 40 years and I've had a decade of mental health problems.
Mm.
That's not associated with my sexuality. So there is that distinction. What it means for us, though, I think, in the longer term, if we're talking about social isolation and so forth, is how do we as a community ensure that the elders in our community are engaged with community? Because the biggest thing for me in my recovery has been re-engaging with my tribe, getting back involved with this community. Save me from suicide. That simple and that blunt.
Absolutely. And I think that's true for all members of the LGBT community. A lot of people I've spoken to feel isolated or don't really know how to connect to other members in the community. But once they do, be it through online avenues or going out or listening to this podcast, it gives them a little bit more hope.
I think any way that you can connect with community is brilliant. I think the number one is always the direct, personal, real-world contact.
Yeah.
Absolutely. You have to find people.
And have conversations face-to-face, which is something that Luke and I have discussed a lot, is that I have much more of a real-world connection with my gay scene, whereas yours is a lot more online.
Cyber.
Yeah,
cyber, I mean, and dick.
Yeah, well, I prefer my dick real rather than cyber in that sense too. But if we can, you know, one of the things that happens in our community, and I've always seen it, is that we get a layer cake of generations. This generation doesn't mix with the one that's older, doesn't mix with the one that's older, doesn't mix with the one that's older, as a generalisation. What I'd love to see us do as a community, and I think this is one of our next big challenges, is to take a spoon to that layer cake, a bloody great spoon to it, and mix it up into a trifle where all ages mix across all age spectrums, because you get the wonderful wisdom of experience coupled with the youthful enthusiasm stuff, and we really will form what has always been the mainstay for survival, and that's family. Mm-hmm. Family that is multi-generational. We always talk about family in our community, but we've always tended to talk about singular or maybe one or two generational thing. But what we really need to do is say, the elders are the great-grandparents.
Yeah.
And then we've got my generation, the grandparents, and then there are the parents, and then there are the new ones. You know,
there's
the
so much we can learn from that. Yeah. I have to say, this is why I always bang on about DTs, because I genuinely feel that it is a huge range of ages there, all mingling, all chatting.
I'd say to younger people who listen to this, don't think that any older man who's talking to you is a dirty old codger trying to sleaze onto you. You might find in that, as I found when I first came out, the first group of people I met were my age and up to 70, and they'd been through World War II, some of those older guys. They had all this amazing experience. They'd lived through the closeted 50s and 60s, and they said to me, we're your family now.
Mm. That's beautiful.
You know, that was 1978, and I've carried that all the way. It's giving me goosebumps.
Yeah.
Telling you.
Yeah.
That, you know.
No, that's really nice. I mean, it's pretty amazing. I can see you talking to someone that was chatting at bars to guys that were closeted and gay in World War II. Do you know what I mean? So by having these
conversations. Oh,
you
know, they had stories, deliciously delightful
I imagine
stories.
They did. Yeah. What was the milkshake bar that was in the 50s in Melbourne? It was like a milkshake bar that was a secret gay hangout.
Oh, really?
Oh, there's Val's Cafe opposite the Melbourne Town Hall. I don't know if that's
the one
you're referring
to. Yeah, I think it might be. They did milkshakes and stuff.
Yeah, which was known for being really welcoming for creative and theatrical.
Yes.
Oh,
yes. Creative and theatrical.
But the interesting thing about that is that there is now a centre at La Trobe University called Val's Ageing and Aged Care.
Really? Fantastic.
Which works on LGBTI elder awareness.
Yeah, great.
That is so cool.
Oh, I like that that's been remembered in that way.
Yeah, there's beautiful. Another one at La Trobe called Alice's Garage, named after a woman who ran a female-only garage in North Melbourne, fixing motorbikes and cars in the 1920s.
Of course, it was in North Melbourne. Amazing.
It's really great that younger people are looking at the history. But as an older person, I've been told I'm not officially an elder yet. I have to wait till 65.
You are in this room, if that makes you feel any better.
Well, I'm your elder this evening.
Time normally takes that.
Yes, yes, normally me.
Is that the other side of that is that we don't want to be treated as historical artefacts.
No.
We don't want to be taken off the shelf, dusted off, have a little examination. Oh, isn't that interesting?
Yeah, that's fair enough.
And then put back on the shelf. We are still people living lives that are active. We want to go on living lives that are active in the community. So we're not interesting objects of art, if that makes
sense.
We're
still part of our society. Yeah.
We're still part of the community. And, you know, we've been part of the community for a long time.
Made the community.
We were out there meeting people in bars before you were born.
I know. I'm jealous of the fact. I mean, the photos that I've seen look a lot more exciting than a lot of the places I've been to since. Wow.
They were no more and no less exciting than the places you go to now.
Wow. Some of the drag shows, at least, definitely were more exciting than some of the ones I've seen these days.
I'm not going to get the crowd. Friends who are still doing drag now, and that's really contentious.
Just to go back to what we were talking about earlier about the importance of connection within the community and the period of time that you had with severe depression over that decade, how did you make those connections that sort of pulled you out of that dark cloud?
I'd put some work into those connections in that period, actually.
Yeah.
Fighting it off, I'd bought myself a camera and I was just interested in taking photographs, and a friend of mine was telling me about his involvement with the Melbourne Chargers Rugby Club, which is Melbourne's gay and inclusive rugby club, one of, I think, 80 or 90 around the world now. And I said to him, would you mind if I came and took some photographs? And he said, I'm sure they wouldn't mind. Well, I went down and took some photographs. The next thing I know, I went back the next week to take their Rugby 101 introduction day, and then I went to the first match. Ooh. And by the end of the year, I won myself a trophy from a football club. Oh, you know, in my childhood, that would have been impossible. Yeah. You know, but those guys were really good and really friendly and really welcoming. And one of them rang me. I disappeared. I did it for a couple of years and then kind of disappeared into depression. Mm. I didn't go out my front door for 3 years. Well, it was that kind of stuff. Michael rang me and he said, how are you? You know, we're kind of missing you. Where have you been? And I said, do you want the headline? You know, I'll give you a tabloid headline of I'm okay, thanks very much. Or do you want the full story? He said, give me the full story. And I told him, and he asked a really valuable and important question. He said, what can we do? He didn't ask, are you okay, which is the Valentine's Day of mental health question. Mm-hmm. You know, are you okay? Let's go have a cup of coffee. None of that. It was practical, tangible, hands-on, what can we do? And 3 or 4 weeks later, 20 guys from the club turned up at my house to fix up my garden, which I hadn't done any work on for 3 years. And they did 6 working bees over the course of 7 or 8 months so that I could sell the house. And in that time, I got reacquainted with them, and the friendships that I had with them deepened extraordinarily. My biological family is really tiny, and my brother came back into my life at that point. So between the biological and the logical, there was this incredible...
It's a great term for the two families.
Yeah. Armistead Maupin, I think, in Tales of the City. Have you read them?
No.
If you haven't, there's a part of your history you've got to go and read, Tales of the City.
Okay.
And Michael and Paul actually started sort of chatting about how do we support Andrew to make the right decisions for his older age? Because I was in my late 50s, but I'd had a preview... With bad mental health, I'd had a preview of what an isolated, unwell old age would look like, and I didn't want to live it. They rescued me from that. And when I sold the house up there, they fed me and sheltered me down here for 3 months. They have woven me a safety net by doing that. You know, they asked me out to things, they invite me, and it wasn't because I was old and sick and all of that. It was just what I've come to see is that they've woven me into the fabric of their lives as a peer who
Which is true community, I think.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I'm a peer who happens to be a little bit older. I'm also dad or granddad or uncle. Or and there are questions, you know, that I can answer. There are conversations where I throw something in that's a different perspective because I am a little bit older. For me, those community groups are the real mainstay of our community. And I'm speaking
that
specifically...
Being the charges.
Yeah, in charges in my case. Mm. But for the gay and lesbian community, they have always been really important ways of people connecting and forming social networks that become their social family. So many times at the charges, I saw young people come along all nerves and shaky and kind of, I don't know what I'm doing here and why am I doing this and I'm still confronting my sexuality or whatever. Before the year's out, before the season is out, they found a group of friends within the club that they then become friends with on an ongoing basis.
Yeah,
sure.
I never lived through criminalised homosexuality.
Okay.
Because I grew up in South Australia.
Yeah. Right, okay.
Okay, and
so, yeah, I guess
1975, and I can...
Yeah.
Here's a little historical anecdote. I was 17, it's in my final year of high school. It was spring day. Dad dropped the morning newspaper on the table and there it was, this big bold headline, homosexuality decriminalised in SA. And I looked at that and I thought, I am not going to bring criminal shame on my family. The other thing I thought was, I cannot move a muscle right at this moment. Because I cannot give away.
Like you don't care.
Yeah, I cannot give away the joy I feel at this headline. I knew I was gay when my captain of my tennis team went up to serve on a golden summer's afternoon. I looked at this lean Australian muscled farmer and I went, you are so handsome.
Mm. So you have that distinct memory of
I have that memory, and I have the memory of also thinking second thought, I cannot tell anybody I thought that. My first partner and I went to Queensland in 1987 or thereabouts, and it was still a criminal offence up there. And we booked a 2-room unit for our holiday. And we ruffled the bed in the other room.
Yeah, right. 1987.
Okay. Yeah, but Tasmania
Jesus,
was
sorry. I'm from South Africa originally, so I'm like, I didn't...
Now, you can imagine what happened in Adelaide in the late 70s, where it was not a criminal offence, when it was still a criminal offence everywhere else in the country.
Mm.
Guess what happened to Adelaide's gay population from interstate? boom.
Yeah.
So when I came out into this thriving, rich, diverse,
yeah,
legal community.
Wow.
So I'm. It sounds like you had quite an active life on the physical scene at the bars and that sort of thing.
No.
No?
I'm not a great bar goer. The first time I ever went to the Mars Bar in Adelaide, and I believe it's only just shut.
I was going to ask if Mars Bar
is just closed. Mars Bar is a big thing in my life because I've met my first long-term partner there. I think it was 2 a.m. We were dancing at 3, engaged at 4, married at 5, and then
we consummated at 6.
We divorced 10 years later. And the bars were just one thing. I walked into the Mars Bar the first time with a friend of mine. She took me. She said, "You have to come." And I froze. Because all my social inadequacy, I'd never gone through dating rituals because I was a gay boy trying to hide it in a country town. So I never got practice to that. And I walked into the Mars Bar and there were all these people who seemed, all these men who seemed to know what they were doing, and God, did they look gorgeous. And I didn't
and
have
that was the
any
first gay venue you'd ever been to?
Yeah.
And so what age around about was that?
That was the second venue.
Okay.
Time I'd been with. I'd had the same reaction from the first bar I'd been taken to.
And how old were you then, sorry?
Oh, 19.
Okay.
Yeah.
No, first, I was sort of 18, 19.
I think a lot of people that haven't experienced or have no knowledge of people that have lived through social isolation assume that they're just quiet people that don't really have much of a life anyway. But from the sounds of things, you've had a very, prior to your social isolation in those 10 years, well, the 3 years specifically where you didn't leave the front door, it's not like you had a quiet little shut yourself away life. You had a very social, active life.
I've had a good life.
It's the things that can... I think a lot of people don't really understand that that can change later in life and that you need to make sure you've got those connections.
I think you need to maintain and sustain and keep on working with those relationships, no matter what age. But I had my 60th recently and I had a fabulous night with the guys who've been my safety net. I cooked them dinner at home, which was a really different thing too, because mostly we go out these days. You know, oh, for the days of people having a Sunday lunch party around their own table.
Yeah, with the good china.
Oh, well, I've still got the Wedgwood that I collected. Oh, but, you know, that's about the only thing from the first relationship.
We have the willow pattern at my house.
But the thing about that is I think back to the first dinner parties and Sunday lunches I went to with those people who'd been through World War II and the Korean War and all of that. And what I learned about banter and conversation and how to fit into our community from being around those sorts of tables, and the information I got and the kind of knowledge that I picked up by being in those tables. We have the 4 C's of my care, you know, that is looking after myself, that is contribution to the community in some way, shape or form, that is some form of creativity and some form of connection, social connection. So what I've been doing is asking people to come and have a meal with me at home. Because I've been living on Newstart, I cannot afford to go out as regularly as everybody else to the cafes and stuff. But I can afford to buy a chook and roast it with some veggies.
Yeah.
And people come over and they really seem to enjoy it. Kicking their shoes off. We kick our shoes off.
Put
we eat
your,
the food.
Your Barbara albums? Was that what you're saying? Your lies at Barbara.
I put my lies.
Your lies at Barbara. Sorry, we're talking about
actually,
I'm not making assumptions for the listeners. We talked about it before the podcast.
Look, if you want to make assumptions, you know, I'm an old-fashioned theatre and opera queen.
Who
does love
now.
Children. And I've been kissed on the cheek by Liza Minnelli.
Oh,
at the same party.
I'm going to have to kiss the same cheek just so you know.
Yeah, well, at the same party, I bought a cigarette from James Taylor. But
Tom's pretty. Now, hang on.
Do we need to kind of wipe you down or something?
Oh, my God, yeah, we do. I don't think the mainstream gives any of the LGBTI community enough credit for the shit they've gone through.
Except...
Or they wouldn't have put us through the poster.
Except the apology that Dan Andrews did in Parliament. I think we need to stand up and cheer.
I genuinely believe, and we talked about this a couple of episodes ago, that a lot of the stuff the Victorian state government is leaps and bounds beyond any government Australia has had as far as... repairing
damage. I'm going to stop you right there. I'm going to stop you right there. How dare you say that to somebody who grew up with Don Dunstan as the Premier?
Okay.
See, I grew up in the Dunstan era.
Yeah.
And I measure everybody's progressiveness against what Don Dunstan did.
Right.
And because Whitlam was around for a few years with that as well. My view is Dan Andrews, and here we go, we're going to upset some of your politically
that's
more
fine.
Right-wing.
That's fine. No, that's fine.
I think Dan Andrews is the Don Dunstan of the 21st century.
Great.
He's a man with progressive principles who sticks to it, who says this is what we are going to do because this is a good thing for our community, and doesn't hedge. And I only wish that Bill Shorten would bloody well do the same thing. Thank you very much, Bill, who's my local member, actually. I think they could if yes. they stop being a small target and be a big target.
Yeah.
Because now we are getting to a time when those people who really did break down those first barriers that won the basic rights yeah. that most of us have built lives on are now older. We've not had that before. I was saying to Dan outside that we are now living in a time where for the first time ever, somebody from 16 to somebody at 100 can have lived an out and proud life.
Yes, true. Yeah.
That is the first time ever in history. That's a whole different way of yeah. looking at who we are as community.
Now, I have used the word queer several times in this podcast, and I've seen you, I've seen your left eye twitch a little bit.
Actually, it's the right eyebrow.
The right eyebrow goes up, and the left eye twitches. What's your relationship with the word queer?
Long, deep, and woundful. Yeah, in ways. I get why people now are using it. I get the re-ownership of it, and we are going to own this and use it to empower us. I would ask very clearly for a real sensitivity around context and intention when you use the word queer. You're sitting here with somebody who is older,
yeah. yes.
who went through a time when a serious newspaper headline could say something like, "The queers are revolting,"
yeah.
Yeah.
and mean it.
Mm.
Now, you guys use that as the title of your show.
We use the game.
Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Mm. HelloFresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.
Gays are revolting.
Yeah. The gays are revolting in a kind of ironic way.
Yes.
Yeah.
Because
yeah.
it also implies that we are revolting against.
Everything. Yes.
You know, destroy the joint.
Yeah. And Luke is also just yeah. revolting.
He's pretty revolting.
But yeah.
And there we have the classic example of gay male bitchiness. Doing, you know, one of the things that what has been a thread of continuity in our lives is that kind of thing. I know I was on a panel at a conference recently. We were talking about LGBTI aging, and there was a very wonderful self-described old dyke on the panel, and she was feisty and fabulous, and she said, "I hate the word queer because it was so offensive." So all we ask is that when you use it with sensitivity about who are you using it with. The other thing I'd say about it is that not everybody in LGBTI identifies as queer. Talk to a lot of intersex people, for example, and you may find a completely different reaction to the use of the word queer. Talk to older gay men. There are older gay men out there who don't even identify as gay. They call themselves homosexual. That gay is too.
Oh, they don't use still. Yeah.
Is still a word that's a bit too uncomfortable.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. To, you know, I can remember newspaper headlines. They would honestly and directly say, "These people are perverts. 57 perverts arrested in." We were, when I first came out, we were still considered by 99% of the population to be sexual perverts.
Yeah, basically considered the same as pedophilia.
Yeah, always the comparison with bestiality and all those old videos.
Absolutely. Yeah. And the thing underneath that was there was no concept of a same-sex relationship.
Mm.
So in 40 years, we've gone from sexual pervert, no concept of a relationship, to legalizing same-sex marriage, and that's all I will call it. I won't call it equality because it's not.
Yeah.
So, Andrew, community and connecting is something that's hugely important to what's going on in the LGBT world at the moment. How can younger members of the community...
Oh, you were just so bloody ageist right there.
Ageist.
I'm Asian. I'm secretly 72.
Oh, my God.
How can younger members of the community who are interested in helping out or connecting with LGBT plus elders, how can they reach out? What can the younger members of the community do, in your opinion?
In my opinion, there are a number of things, both formal and informal, you can do. The formal one would be get in touch with VAC or get in touch with Switchboard, both of which run outreach program to visit older people either in resi care or living at home who are on home care packages.
VAC being the Victorian AIDS Council.
Sorry, Thorn Harbour Health, formerly known as Victorian AIDS Council. Well, that shows a kind of generational difference right there. You know, I don't know what VAC is.
Sorry.
Wow. So that's the formal stuff. The other would be the informal. if you're a member of things like a community group or a sporting group and there are older members in that club,
yeah.
what are you doing to connect with them?
Mm-hmm.
Mm. Or are you just looking at them from a distance?
Mm-hmm.
Go and chat to them. If you're out in a pub or whatever, I mean, I don't know where people go these days. There's so few, it seems.
They go to the Gazer Revolting Live at Midsummer Festival.
Get your tickets.
Well, I tell you, since we're doing a plug for Midsummer Festival, and I might be preempting something here, but at this year's Midsummer Carnival, Alice's Garage ran a tea tent for elders.
Oh, fantastic. At the Carnival Day in that
on
section.
On Carnival
with,
Day.
Yep, fantastic.
So if they do that again, and I'm hoping that they will, come drop by and say hello to the elders
yeah.
who are there, because it's a bit like the CWA show tent.
At heaven. At the oh, my God, that's my favourite. That's the only reason to go.
Oh, really?
The scones are the most amazing scones.
That, that is why people go to the Royal Melbourne Show. Yeah. Go and say hello.
Yeah.
Third Sundays of the month in Fitzroy at the Spiegel Tent from February next year.
Oh, yeah.
The Elders Dance Club is starting up its 2019 program, which leads to the ball at the end of the
Brilliant.
Year. It's not only for old people. Mm. It's not only for elders.
Mm-hmm.
Come along and have a dance with an older man who might teach you how to quickstep or foxtrot or waltz
That'd
around a ballroom floor.
Yeah.
You know, come along and do it. Those sorts of things. Look out for the people. Start a conversation
yeah.
with somebody who's 30, 40 years older
yeah.
than you are and listen to them.
Mm-hmm.
That's what I would say.
And I guess for the online people that are maybe not out in the world yet or aren't ready to connect in person and that sort of stuff, there's also the podcast that we were talking about off air earlier, which is the Rainbow, I can't remember the name of it again.
The Rainbow Reviews.
Rainbow Reviews. So that's in conjunction with Arts Centre
Melbourne.
Correct?
Yes, that's yeah. right. Rainbow Reviews is a fabulous thing, the Arts Centre in conjunction with all the Queen's men who run the Coming Back
that's
Out
right.
Ball.
Yep.
They put together this wonderful little project where the Arts Centre provides freebie tickets to older LGBTI people who can't afford to go to the theatre, and they get them back. They then sit them down in a room afterwards and they have a conversation about what they've
wow.
seen. Now, you've got people in there who've been going to the theatre
yeah.
40, 50 years.
And it seems and yeah. we're involved as well, yeah.
It really highlights something that younger people can forget about older people, and that is we still have intelligence and we still have opinions
mm-hmm.
and we still want to share. We still have ideas. We still have imagination. Don't wrap us up in pastels and put us on the bowling green.
Yeah.
You've got no contribution to make.
Yeah.
I can't wait to hear what they have to say about Tina Arena and Evita.
I think Tina Arena and Evita is... I saw the original production of Evita at
oh,
the
yes.
Adelaide Festival Theatre in about 1980-something or other. So she'll be better than the woman they had play Evita.
I'm sure she will
way
be. Apparently she's incredible.
Yeah, it's had excellent reviews, mm. so...
Well, thank you so much again, Andrew, for joining us today.
You don't have to be that enthusiastic. Try it again. Tone it down.
Thank you, Andrew, for coming in today.
That is my pleasure.
And talking with us. It's
I'm
been
mesmerized.
A pleasure.
We definitely have to have you back again
Your
soon.
Wealth of knowledge.
I am more than happy to come back because there's all sorts of things we can talk about. Like I just said, I've got opinions. Like us oldies, we all have opinions on all sorts of things.
Yeah.
Mm. Not just aging.
Yeah.
And well, that's why you and I are going to do an entire podcast, just the two of us talking about Liza Minnelli.
Oh, well, yes. You know, and this cheek.
Starting
and
a
that
new,
cheek.
And how
yeah.
I've never washed it for 30 years.
And debate why Bette Midler is better than Barbara Streisand. I can't wait.
So I've kind of touched on this briefly in like previous episodes, like talking about like, I've only recently made like some closer gay friends and stuff, and like it sort of got me thinking about making friends like when you were much younger in mm-hmm. school and stuff, and then making friends as an adult. It's a weird thing because like
it
you're
is.
Sort of not forced
yeah.
to be around that person
yeah.
all the time.
It's hard.
Like mm-hmm. when you're in a classroom and it's just like, oh no, you're stuck with these people for the next however
yeah.
long.
Friend, like proximity.
I gotta make some
yeah.
real friends here. Whereas like when you're an adult, it's just like, I have my work friends
yeah.
and then like I have the people that I know outside of work. Because I've definitely felt like I've struggled just making friends in general, like
yeah.
finding people that I have stuff in common with and that we actually have time to hang out.
Yeah. I applied for this show to make friends. That's
oh,
how bad
that hasn't worked.
That's how bad
how that turned out.
I am. Like honestly, I've been friends with JB since high school.
Yeah. yeah.
So we're like going on 15 years.
Wow.
We are the only friends we have.
Yeah. yeah.
is each other.
I think meeting people through work is actually exactly the same as school. We're just, as adults, less open. We've put up these guards now where we don't. Like, I have my work friends. I have a couple that have turned into genuine, very close friends. A lot of people that I work with that if they had their last shift tomorrow, I probably would be polite if I saw them. Yeah. But I probably wouldn't make the time
to sign their card.
Whereas I think when you're a kid, you're more open to everything. But as adults, we put these guards up, which then also stops us outside of the workplace making friends as well, which is why I'm such a big fan of pubs and trivia nights and bingo nights and the gay drag shows and making gay friends, because I think it's really important to have friends that understand what you've been through. It's so good having straight friends. JB is obviously an incredible friend for you. My very dear friend, Bridie, who I don't talk about enough, and I really should. Do you know my best friend is a Paralympian heterosexual woman?
Really?
It's like the opposite of me, yeah.
Oh, really?
But even our very best heterosexual friends will never fully understand some of the stuff we've been through.
So, but like, when you're out, how do you actually make friends with these people? Because it's like everyone's partying.
Fuck them.
Fuck them. Okay, so you fuck them later.
Look, I will be honest. A lot of friends that I have made have been people that I've gotten drunk, hooked up with, then. But I've probably hooked up with them because I enjoyed the conversation with them in the first place.
There's got to be some sort of connection.
But there is also a lot of friends I've made in these places that aren't people that I've hooked up with.
Yes.
I think it's really fun. Obviously, I host a trivia night. I talk about it all the time. Yeah. I also host a bingo night and stuff. And I think I do that because the straight scene of our generation, maybe the older straight scene, but younger straight people don't really go to things like that.
No.
I think the gay scene still has them because it's a great way of chatting and meeting other people. That you've been to my bingo and trivia.
Yeah, no, it's really social. Like host, it's really engaging.
The host will pull people up and sort of have a little joke with them, make fun of them a little bit, give them a prize or whatever. So that then when they go out to the smoking area or in the breaks or whatever, you can say to the person, oh, hey, well done on stage before she was a real bitch to you.
I do enjoy that aspect of it because when the normal clubbing, everyone's just fucked up dancing on the dance floor. It's not a social aspect. You go out, people are just looking for like to fuck and like to go out and like meet market.
As much
like,
as I love Poof Doof and the Peel and that sort of shit, it is a lot harder to make friends when it's just thumping music and shots.
I find it interesting as someone that has suffered.
It's
cute.
It's like a Pokemon.
As someone that suffered with social anxiety, approaching people in a bar environment is not something that I've ever been comfortable with.
Neither have I, ever. And still
and
not.
It's not something I would seek out. So I do think there are alternate ways that young LGBT people can connect and make friends. Do you know what I always recommend? Is after your psych session, just hang around reception.
Just hang around
for ages.
I know.
Because then you're meeting other people that likely also suffer from mental health issues.
And you've got
some common ground.
Yeah. And you hope you're the one that's better off. And you can
It's just to make you feel better about yourself.
Mental health is a competition.
Yes.
And I'm losing. But I always think the thing is common ground. Yeah. That's what brings people together. And the important thing, I think, as an LGBT person is that sometimes your sexuality is not the common ground that you go for. You can meet queer people and you can meet LGBT people at like non-gay
events. Absolutely. Yeah. I just think it's very important to bring it into the real world.
Yeah, well, that's what I'm saying is if you look at the things that you were interested in and engage in them in the communities around them, most likely you are going to encounter other members of the LGBT community.
Yeah.
Thornbury has like social choirs.
Oh, that's cool.
Social choirs.
Yeah, and they're not like...
It's like Glee. I'm picturing Glee.
Yeah, it's like ballpoint donation. One of my friends runs one above a retail store, and it's literally like 10 people that just meet up, have some snacks, and they pick a song in a Facebook group every week, and they just learn how to sing it. And it's not exclusively LGBT, but there's a strong queer component to it.
I mean, I feel like more people have anxiety about joining a choir than going to a trivia night.
But oh my God, singing in front of people.
It's but amazing though, like if you look into those things in pottery, you know, life drawing, there are a lot of things that don't involve potentially a bar or a nightclub or a psychology practice. You can meet other members of the LGBT community and make friends with them. I am not good at making friends.
No, neither am I.
I can see why. Mikey, you work, a large part of your job is conversation as a hairdresser. Do you make friends through that, or is that more just sort of business conversation?
Like 99% of the time it is business conversation. Yeah. Yeah. I have very fortunately made a couple of really close friends now through having them as clients at
queer
work.
Friends.
Queer friends.
Yeah.
And they specifically were only seeing the men in the salon because they only felt comfortable seeing other queer men in the salon. We've all started to become friends with the other queer clients, which has been really amazing. And like, especially in the beginning, it was sort of just like, this is awkward.
Yeah.
Do you like Drag Race? Sure. Yeah. What gay things do you like?
Drag Race, standard go-to.
But no, I have made some really great friends through my work, which has been great. I've definitely struggled a lot more in the bar scene because I have also suffered with like quite severe social anxiety in the past. Mm-hmm. Even when I'm in drag still, like it's still in the back of my mind, and like I find it easier when people come up to me rather than me approaching other people.
I guess what I was to make it clear what I was trying to say about the gay nights.
Yeah.
Is it those nights that have a framework around them?
Mm.
If we were able to just talk, we'd do it at train stations, or we'd do it at Dorf or whatever. But those nights that have a framework, the whole group is sort of there as a group working through. I just feel like it makes it a lot easier to communicate. And I'm genuinely, if I'm not on stage, I'm really shit, or not in front of a microphone, I'm really shit at talking to people I don't know.
Yeah.
But when I've been overseas by myself, and I will find a gay bar in San Fran or London or New York or whatever that has nights like that on, because the gays are really good at having this camaraderie at those nights where it's sort of like, oh, come join our team, or she's giving us hard questions now, when the fuck is my number coming up, or whatever.
So stuff that I look for in a friendship with new people generally.
Are you doing another podcast?
No. Oh my god, are you cheating on us?
Just doing all the other podcasts.
He's going to share and retweet.
No, did you say retreat?
Yeah, I did. Sorry, share and retweet.
Like, generally, I like people who are unapologetically themselves in a nice way.
Yeah.
Not someone who's abrasive or anything, but someone who's just like, oh, hey, how's it going? Like, what's up? Or like, just someone that I have common ground with, I guess.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Mine's sense of humor.
Yeah. I love someone who can make me laugh for sure.
And it has to be that sense of humor that sort of gets to the boundary, but not mean, but black. Does that make sense?
Yeah.
Like dark.
Why gotta be black?
Dark. Don't. You're crossing the line. Dark humor that's not mean.
Yes. Yeah, definitely.
Which is why I think, like, within 40 seconds of meeting Luke, I was like, oh, yeah, I love this guy.
You're a horrible person. I love you.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, absolutely.
I've always found myself gravitating towards females and, like, girlfriends because I guess I've always.
So, what about in a gay friend? What do you find?
Well, I've always had my brother as my, like, gay best friend. Course, so, I've always had that. And I've never. Maybe that's always.
So hotness.
The reason I've never really calm down. I've never really felt the need to like have many gay friends. It's only really this year that I've kind of started making more friends with other guys and everything. But yeah, just be genuine. Like, don't be one of those fake gays that's just like focused on climbing the social ladder. Like, just be real.
Nah. Yeah.
Like, it's just I don't have
There's
time
a
for
ladder?
That.
I feel attacked.
There's it just I think it's
one of the lesbians bought it from Bunnings.
So noticeable when people are just very focused on being seen.
Yes.
Yeah. Just be real and be funny and be a nice person.
Yeah. Mm.
All I'm looking for is food, shelter, and a Netflix password.
Yeah.
That's sort of my friend requirement. Any sort of magical powers helps as well.
Yes.
Yeah. Time travel.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Waxing.
Yeah. Butt waxing.
Wow.
Especially if they can provide strips.
Skills. I look for skills in friends.
What kind of skills?
That's why.
Like zombie apocalypse skills?
Oh. I always, you know, I'm not even joking.
I'm not joking, bitch.
I am not joking, but I often run through to get to sleep like an apocalypse scenario.
Oh, really? Okay.
Yeah, and then I pick out of my friends.
Oh, wow.
Who made the cut.
This is like MySpace top friends.
Who I would contact to be like that person.
Yeah.
Like, I need to go get JB.
Mm. Yeah.
And then, like, I would go get Mikey because I want to look good and I want haircuts.
I can build things too.
Yeah, and I run through a whole scenario. Like, who would
skate away from the zombies?
Yeah.
Cutthroat, or who would turn
on
you and stuff like that? Yeah,
you're a great meat shield.
Tom's a wild card.
Like, I know how to drive a boat.
A boat, but not a car.
I feel in a zombie apocalypse, Tom might actually get Stockholm Syndrome and side with the undead.
I start advocating for the
Yes. It is a big part of gay culture is preparing for the apocalypse.
Yes.
Yeah.
I don't know why we haven't talked about it.
All right, we're changing the rest of this topic. Yeah. Here. Who's your dream zombie apocalypse?
What would you grab first?
Yeah. Well, the ammo.
Yeah.
And race straight for Wet on Wellington. Here you come again.
What is happening?
I'm just singing for you because I watched my favorite film of the last decade recently.
Yeah. What?
It is going straight to my Muriel's Wedding and Priscilla. Make me feel a little bit sad but happy at the same time.
That's
feel good. You don't have to be a certain person to survive kind of movie. And it is the new Netflix movie, Dumplin'.
Based
on the youth teen novel starring Jennifer Aniston and Danielle McDonald, who is an Australian. Just a little recap.
Is that now, the main chick?
She's
Aussie?
Yeah. Dumplin'.
Oh, awesome.
Yeah, she's Aussie. So I know I told you all you had to watch it before you got here. I'm excited to hear your opinions. Just a little recap for our listeners, and I'll try not to give away any spoilers, but basically this is all in the preview. But it's basically about a girl in Texas. It's set in the modern day, final year of high school, and she's a plump and not conventionally beautiful girl. Think Muriel in Muriel's Wedding.
I'll watch it one day.
Yeah. Fuck, Kyle.
I'm sorry. Every time.
She's a bit dumpy, but has a very great outlook on life. Now, she was raised by her auntie, who was camp and fabulous and wonderful. Who taught her the magic of Dolly Parton. Yes. So she loves Dolly Parton. Now, the movie starts 6 months after her auntie has died.
Mm-hmm.
She had lived with her mother and auntie. Her mother, played by Jennifer Aniston, who is an ex-beauty pageant winner who runs a beauty pageant and is still obsessed with that period of her life and really has never connected with her daughter. She also has this crush who's a hot guy. She has this best friend who is more conventionally looking but totally accepts her for who she is, but is bullied by everyone else in her life. Mm. Decides to join a beauty pageant to sort of
rebel against her mum.
She says it's to rebel against her mum, but I think what we're reading between the lines is it's to connect with her mum.
Yes. Yes.
She sort of becomes an adult maturity wise and is like, well, if my mum's not going to connect with me, I'll connect with her. And then finds some drag queens through notes that her auntie had left behind that run a Dolly Parton tribute.
It's like a real southern.
And she goes and meets them and learns from a gay black drag queen how to successfully compete in a beauty pageant. It's camp. There's drag queens. There's Jennifer Aniston. There's women don't conform.
What more do you want?
What did you boys think?
Yeah. I absolutely loved it.
Yeah.
There were points where I was like, oh my God, I'm going to cry.
Yeah,
like,
I cried constantly.
Holy crap.
Oh, really?
But it was just like such a feel good film. And it was just produced really, really
It was
well.
Real wholesome content.
Yes.
Yeah.
I don't think I'm the demographic for this kind of film.
You're a gay man.
Oh, yeah. Jesus. My favorite directors are David Lynch and Lars von Trier.
Sure.
So if it's not 6 hours long, cut out of chronological order and absolutely excruciating to watch, it's not my kind of
No, that's okay. Film. But were you in pain watching it? Did you think it was a bad film?
No, I think it was wholesome. These are the kind of films that people enjoy watching.
Mm.
If films don't make me feel like pretentious crap, you know, that's just what I watch.
So you're like into your more edgy, arty.
Yeah. So like my favorite films are like Melancholia.
Sure. Do you think it was a bit too teeny for you?
I'm sure you've been forced to watch chick flicks before. How does this rate in your scheme of?
I don't think it's quite at Mean Girls level.
No.
Where I think some of those films are actually brilliant and they can transcend their genre.
Yeah.
But I can see that this film, especially on Twitter, from some of my friends who are plus-sized, that this film means a lot more to them because they're getting that representation that is really important to them. And it's telling a story that's really quite down to earth. It's not like Shallow Hal or whatever.
Yeah. No.
I still don't understand that movie. Gwyneth Paltrow is like plus size, but only one guy.
Yeah, it's weird.
Jack Black. Yeah. Enough said.
That I can see for certain people, this is a very important film.
Yes,
definitely.
I mean, I feel like this film breaks a lot of rules for plus size people in that generally when there's a plus size protagonist, which is very rare in itself, she doesn't end up with the hot guy. She ends up with the dorky guy that she realizes the hot guy was an asshole anyway and he was always going to love the skinny girl and that she really turns out liked the dorky guy that she never really noticed before. It's like, no, you can actually fucking end up with the hot guy.
Yeah,
that happens.
Totally. It's so sweet.
There was never, because I was just waiting for that bit where it's like, oh, it turns out he's fucking someone else.
Yeah.
It's like, it's fine. He can just want to fuck you. It's fine.
I think one of my favorite things is that it wasn't just like one plus size character.
Yeah. No, yeah. I loved the second one. Yeah, she was so beautiful.
Like her character name is Millie Mikulchuk. Am I saying that right? Mm. Mikulchuk.
Yeah.
I absolutely loved her.
She's so like, cute.
Just the greatest character. So bubbly, so beautiful. Yeah. Like
nothing got
Christian
her down.
Gal, nothing got her down, but like wasn't judgmental at all and was like,
pure
I'm gonna
as fuck.
Be me. Yeah. Screw you guys.
Yeah. Like, and, I so agree with that. Like, there is several different characters in this movie that are just normal, and we shouldn't be saying plus size. It's not even plus size.
No,
it's just like literally normal sized people, but they're in a movie, and they're different kinds of normal sized people.
That's it.
Which is fantastic. And I love that you brought her up. I thought she was an incredible character. I thought she was brilliantly acted. And we're talking about a film which features a girl that doesn't have to change herself. Like the movie's not about her learning lessons; it's about the rest of the world learning lessons. And the other film that I thought it connected with was Hairspray.
Whoa.
Which Maddie, who played this character you're talking about, played Tracy Turnblad in The Live.
Because
I was watching it going, oh my god,
I know her, right?
She is, I mean, the whole cast, but those two especially are fucking going places. Danielle McDonald, who played Dumplin, or Willa Dean.
Willa Dean! What a name! So good to say.
She is Australian and couldn't get work here and went to the States and did Patty Cakes.
Which I still haven't watched.
Yeah.
I haven't heard of that.
It's like a couple of years ago.
Yeah, it's like
really?
Yeah.
A rapper movie.
Yeah.
Yeah. 8 Mile.
Yes.
Wow.
I also love that it had Kathy Najimy in it.
Is that the Christian mom?
Oh my God. Yeah.
Is she the chick from Hocus Pocus?
Yes! She's from Hocus Pocus and she's from Sister. She's not so plus size now, but she was a bigger lady when she first saw, and was kind of that character in the 90s.
It was just like a very small role.
It was a small role, but it was a beautiful little nod to Kathy Najimy.
Like,
she fits in. Also, they're just making this film for gay men. Like anything with Kathy Najimy in it is.
And they had Ginger Minj from RuPaul's in it. She wasn't like a huge role, but like
it was a good role.
I think the role she played was amazing.
Yeah, she was good. She was good.
She was feel like, you know, when often you have like
when
a reality
TV forced.
A reality TV person in a serious thing, you're kind of that's awkward, but no, she played it really well. It was very real.
Have you guys seen that a bunch of the RuPaul girls have done a remix lip sync
to
Jolene?
Oh, really? Because of this?
Yeah. It's advertisement for the movie. Yeah, it's really quite good. You should look it up.
So it's on, I think Netflix released the video clip. So Dolly Parton was one of the producers.
She's part of the movie.
That's
so cool.
Produced. I don't think people realize.
How old is Dolly now?
And I really love her. She is 72 years old. And I think people forget that she's an incredibly smart woman. She has a theme park, Dollywood.
She has a fucking theme park?
She has a Dollywood.
Are you kidding me?
Yeah.
Like with roller coasters?
Yeah, a total theme park.
What?
She owns the rights to pretty much all of her songs that she's ever performed.
Yeah.
Like a lot of people have sold off their own rights to their own songs. And produced this and wrote a whole lot of new songs for it and authorized the remix of Jolene for the RuPaul's Girls to do the video clip to. I did, when I watched a video clip, fucking loved it. But I was like, girls, this isn't a lip sync battle. You should know the lyrics.
I know, right?
I know. Did they Valentino it?
I'm like, come on.
Take off the mask.
Also, it's Jolene by Dolly Parton. Yeah. Who doesn't know these lyrics?
To be honest, since watching the movie, I have been listening to a lot more Dolly. Yeah. I was like, this is good. I'm getting secundary.
Good advertisement.
And you're also getting into your queer icons.
Hi. Yeah, well, my favorite drag queen is, I think, based off Dolly Parton, Trixie.
She's
very aesthetic.
Yeah,
totally.
Oh, she would have been spewing that she can get.
I didn't even think of that. Poor Trixie.
Ginger. Like, it was just sort of like representing actual real bodies in real life.
Also, side note, that new Miley Cyrus song totally reminds me of Jolene. Have you heard it?
Well, Miley worked on her last album with
Did she? Because so she has a lot of Dolly vibes.
Yeah.
Like,
yeah.
She sounds like her.
Dolly is Miley's godmother.
What?
Like, they've done a lot of stuff together previously.
Really?
That checks out. Yeah, that makes sense.
Really, I mean, that makes perfect sense.
Because they did they did a live performance of Jolene. So it was Dolly, Miley, and then the a cappella group Pentatonix.
Yeah. Do you think that this is going to enter the gay archives? Is this going to be?
Totally.
Yeah.
Wow.
I feel like this is, and I keep going back to Mira's Wedding because when you look at Mira's Wedding, it's not there's nothing gay about it.
No.
Yeah. It's got ABBA in it, but ABBA wasn't even gay until Priscilla came along.
I mean, sure
it wasn't thought of by the wider
community. I know that much. I mean, I really liked it, but I didn't. like, even though they were drag queens, I didn't really particularly think of it as this is a gay movie.
No, but that's what I'm saying. It's not a gay film, but there's lots of gay. There's lots of films that aren't gay. Cabaret, for example. Sound of Music. Yeah. There's lots of films that aren't.
It's just like
that haven't got gay.
It's campy and it's fun.
I'll watch
and,
all of these one day.
And we connect to it. There's also something about that relationship with her mother that I think a lot of gay people probably.
Yeah.
Maybe not as bad as that relationship, but have that feeling of like, oh, I want to connect with you, but I don't know how, kind of thing, you know, and trying to adjust your life to connect with your parents, maybe.
I think the thing about a lot of these gay, like, queer films is they have, like, a subversive element to them.
Yeah.
They've got a little bit of bite in their humour and the things that they're presenting.
I mean, I did think that we were going to get a bit of a dark sort of at the third quarter of the film.
Oh, yeah, with her mum would come in and it would be
No, I thought it'd be more like that happy face she had.
Yeah.
It was covering some really dark feelings or something like that. But then again, it is also, but you want to be true to a book, and the book was a young adult novel, and which I haven't read yet. I've ordered it. I'm so excited.
Oh, you have?
And also, I can read a young adult novel. That's easy.
Yay. Super cute. Thanks again to all our beautiful revolters. We hope to see you soon. At our live show.
Yes. Well, don't forget to buy tickets to our live show, which is on the 3rd of February at Evie's Disco Diner. Please buy your tickets at midsummer.org.au.
Get there early because I'll be there early, having a drink.
Yeah.
You can make friends with those.
If you're looking for those links, or if you're looking to connect with the community.
With the revolters.
Like we've been talking about, join our Facebook group. Just search The Gays Are Revolting on Facebook, follow us on Twitter at Gays Revolting, or on Instagram at Gays Revolting Pod.
And make sure you tune in for our next episode, because it will be our last one while we take a very teeny tiny little Christmas New Year's break.
It'll be our special Christmas episode.
Yeah, our special Oh my god, are we doing a RuPaul Christmas special?
Oh my gosh.
Yes.
Okay, well, sounds super scripty.
Yeah. As long as Eureka's not here.
See you next week, bitches. Bye.
Bye. Bye.
Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here, and it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.
Acast powers the world's best podcasts. Here's a show that we recommend.
Want to join a film club that has real frank discussions, talking about films that you actually want to watch?
Well, then look no further, because we are Frank Film Club with me, Maisie Williams. And each week we watch a film and then come together and obsess over it, or sometimes absolutely slate it. Either way, there's always a lot to say. And the films that we pick range all the way from like 90s and noughties classics all the way up to new releases that are coming out every single week. And sometimes we get our listeners to pick for us.
And we all work in the film industry, don't we, ladies?
Indeed.
So we really love to look at specifically how a film was made.
So if this sounds like your bag, then come and have a listen to Frank Film Club. And remember, absolutely everyone is welcome in this club.
Acast helps creators launch, grow, and monetize their podcasts everywhere. Acast.com.